For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como
enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes, y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42,
puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
Voy a ponerme la vacuna Prevnar 20 porque estoy en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica,
la cual pudiera llevarme al hospital. Así que preguntaré sobre Prevnar 20.
65 años o más, puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20, vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
Conan.
What up?
I get it. You want to raise your testosterone, but do any of these boosters actually work?
To tell you the truth, Disco, I don't know. I only use legacy subs, and let me tell you this. This is empirical shit. I went to get my testosterone levels done before I was using legacy subs, and it was very low, and then afterwards it did increase, so it does work.
Yeah, TestX9 works. And don't just take legacy subs' word for it. They show you how, with links to independent studies on every single one of the 9 key ingredients. No bull, no bro science, just facts. TestX9 is an NSF-certified third-party lab tested made in the USA. Level up your strength, energy, libido, and drive now with TestX9 from Legacy Sports Nutrition. If you want to really level up, go for the ultimate test deck, adding T-Assist, a pro-grade estrogen inhibitor and test enhancer, and the best-selling sleep aid, Recovery PM, the show's favorite, and see why improving your sleep is the key to unlocking your mental and physical potential. Guys, did you know that the majority of testosterone release occurs while you sleep? That's why we put this stuff together and why it really works. Stop setting for average, go to legacysubs.com and use the code K100 for 10% off your entire order. And if you subscribe to have it shipped every 30 days, you can still get the discount every single time. It's brought to you by 3-time world champion Nick Aldis and 10-time world champion Mickey James, who developed and used these products themselves. LegacySubs.com. Level up with Legacy, and the code is K100.
And let me tell you, we've been doing business with Nick for a while now. This is one of our most requested items. People always buy all his supplements because they work, or if not, he would have left our show a long time ago. We use them, and they work, and it's not just this testosterone. They've got stuff for your memory, for your energy, for sleeping. Go check them out at Legacy Subs. Boom.
I'm going to be controversial and just say, I just don't like the way matzo ball soup tastes. I've tried it 3 or 4 times, and I just can't get into it.
It really is terrible. It's not a good kosher food is not
Like, it really isn't. You're not going to, like, if the gavelta fish is something there. I've had mozzarella soup, but it doesn't, man. You're right, it doesn't taste good. You know?
I worked this show up in Canada for the Megan brothers. They're promoters and they help
The twins. Yeah, I like them.
Yeah, dude. Like, hilarious guys, bro. And it, like, these Orthodox Jews pay $400 for a ticket to these special shows. And the one at Rain, they usually have in the backyard, and they have, like, the Toronto Raptors announcer there, Canada's fastest man, Jake Roberts is over there.
Oh, yeah, they're clued in. They're like, they're connected to some stuff. Oh, you know?
They're connected, bro. And the one year we had to have it inside the synagogue, and, bro, like, these people pay top dollar for these tickets. There was a buffet of all kosher food, but I'm talking racks of ribs, everything. It was like a king's feast, not the usual what you think, you know, of what we were talking about that way. So I've been in some pretty funny wrestling shows with some of the most high-level Jews that roll through Toronto in that area, and they had a good old time, man. So I don't
see this.
What the hate is or why that gets thrown out, like you said, is just kind of a neutralizer of, like, anti-Semitic. Oh, I can't say anything else. Well, what does it mean?
This is how bad it's gotten. You know Stu Stone, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
okay. So, and his gimmick was, I'm a powerful Jew.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that was like 6, 7. That was a little while ago, right? Because that was AAW or FSW. He came in and do that gimmick. That's like 10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Is it inappropriate for him to refer to himself like that, like in 2022?
Yeah, well, that
you would think that, like, there's an audience people that does think that is inappropriate. That's how fast this shit's changed, you know?
Right. Yeah. And is that woke culture? I don't think Stu Stone cares. He's our
age. No, because this is funny. That was his character, a powerful Jewish, you know, manager guy.
Well, dude, that's what Ari is in. What was the one with the cool guys? And they're all in L.A.
Entourage.
Entourage, right?
Like, right. That's what Robert Stone should be in NXT. Right. Should have been 100 times over on the main roster, managing guys, being their mouthpiece. So they're missing on all accounts, and I don't understand why they always get so upset about saying it, because it's either said with pride or said with an inflection of, like, don't you dare say this word either. It's like, what is going on, man? With sticks and stones break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Except
no, words are violence now. It's ridiculous. Yeah, next is from John Roddy, and the subject is bad Conan idea. My question is mostly for Conan while he's not here, but I also like Disco and Joe's opinion on it too. Conan, I was just watching a K100 YouTube clip where you said that you think the Roman Reigns should have dropped the title to Drew McIntyre at the Clash at the Castle show in the UK. My question is, what sense would that make? Drew winning the title in the UK would get a huge hometown pop, but then what? Why would people around the world give a shit that Drew won in the UK? Also, even if Drew did win the title, what money matches are there for him to have? There are none. Booking TV or pay-per-view shows simply to the hometown pop is exactly the dumb kind of shit that Tony Khan keeps doing, and look at the poor state that AEW in right now. Disco and Joe, I'd love to hear your take on this as well. First of all, okay, you can't underestimate, okay, that this sentence right here, Drew winning the title in the UK would get a huge hometown pop. Bro, the WWE has had so many opportunities to deliver these massive pops, okay, where a storyline is built up, you're in the right place at the right time, and the person, 1, 2, 3, and there's an eruption from the crowd, and they don't pull the trigger on it.
Sammy in Montreal was one recently as well.
And I'm like thinking, like, dude, like, why not do that? Like, you can't figure out the story after. Like, if Drew wins, what's the meaning thing? Okay, the bloodline's going to try to figure out how to get this thing back from
right.
And like, and they're going to connive. They're going to thing. They're going to, like, you know, they're going to try and set up with Heyman is going to be involved. Bro, that's you got 8 weeks worth of TV right off the bat with the rematch. Okay.
And the reason that he wins in Clash of the Castle and overcomes the heels is because the people are behind him. And then when he gets caught in a trap and loses it, it's because he's not on home ground. The title is a prop that allows people to have an interest in direct their emotions, especially heels, to do more despicable things in order to stay on top. And the babyface needs to keep fighting them off at every angle and somewhat just escaping, but escaping with their pride and still holding the title.
And the problem with that super long title reigns is having, I know not everybody, but a lot of people dig the long title reign, is finding the right guy to take it off him. And I think at that time, Drew was the closest thing to that. Right now, I don't see who, obviously The Rock's going to come in and who knows what's going to happen there, but I don't see anyone else other than Drew at that time who could take Roman, take the title from him convincingly.
And would you have thought, like, bro, this happens all the time. And bro, it keeps the booking logical, okay, to where, like, you know, we don't know the finish of matches all the time. Okay, perfect example. Would you have thought that that Perea beats Adesanya? Would you have thought that Leon Edwards beats Usman?
No,
because your booking would have said, okay, Usman needs to win, then he needs to fight Chimaev. Like that's how you would book it, right? But that didn't happen.
Not if this you see like, the Ferrara fight. That guy, I knew that guy was going over, dude. That guy's an animal.
Yeah, but like sometimes you can't just like, you know, you gotta mix things up to keep the fans on the, you know, on their toes. So next one's from Ilya Vislaguzov, and the subject is Mexican wrestling style. Greetings to the K100 cast, the great Conan, the Superior One, and JoJo, the man of the 100 shows. It's Ilya from the Holy Land, Israel. Question for Conan. Please explain what is Mexican wrestling style. What is the difference between American wrestling? From your point of view and experience, can you say a few words about its origins? And without disrespect, does the cooperation during the match is a part of it, or just bad habits of modern wrestlers? Because for me, the cooperation is a channel changer. Thank you, Conan. Wish you strong health and peace. We'll say this for Conan, but Mexican wrestling is just a different cultural style. Everybody has a mask. They kind of represent a comic book type character. So they kind of wrestle like comic book characters, flying through the air, and, you know, and it's like, I don't know, it's not really, you know, the style isn't geared towards, you know, to, you know, grown men infused with each other fighting. It's on, you know, lucha, you know, characters with masks that are, you know, like superheroes kind of, I don't know, it's just different culture. Plus two, in Mexico, there's still a very strong adherence to the suspension. Like, a lot of people think it's real over there still. Even with that style, you know, it's kind of weird. Like, yeah, in the year 2022 is like that, but that's what it, but it is predicated on the fact that enough of people still think it's real. So
cooperation during a match is whatever, like Disco just said, the fans, you know, do suspend their disbelief to deal with that. But blatant cooperation is definitely a turnoff. I don't care what anyone says, because I have friends that aren't deep hardcore fans that'll put on a match and go, I can't watch this. Why is he standing there waiting for the guy to dive on him? Why are they just slapping each other and not and allowing it? You know, blatant cooperation does turn some fans off for sure.
Yeah, but blatant cooperation in lucha isn't just because of what it is. That's just bad lucha work. Mm-hmm. Cooperation in lucha should look like momentum reversed, where you make a quick reverse on something and that carries you through into an up and over arm drag or whatever it is, Cope Ton Hilo, you know, whatever the move of the week is, you know, Cope Ton Hilo, as I got mixed up there, you know, to put it over. And I may be incorrect in this too, obviously, in the tradition of ancient Aztec warriors and the masks and everything that went on there. I think some of the origin was supposed to be like, these are the gods fighting in the origins of luchador in that as well. I could be incorrect in that, but seems like from my early fan days, I remember that. But they just like the spins and they like the aerial. And I think that's also part of the people in how they, you know, like the magic in their life. I know a lot of literature, like Water for Chocolate, books like that, that are written by Latin authors, always have a little bit of magic mixed into them. That's a literary device. So I think that probably is inside of Lucha Libre as well.
Next is from Niall Foster. The subject is drinking. We're not going to play these clips, but this is a very weird email question. Yeah. I've noticed a very disturbing habit that Tony Khan has picked up over the last few years. He pretends to drink during interviews. In this Barstool Wrestling clip, he's clearly holding an empty cup and pretending to drink from during the interview. In an Ariel Helwani interview, Tony seems to have an endless coffee for 77 minutes. Why is he faking the drink? And in Inside the Ropes interview, he's putting the cup to his mouth for a drink but not swallowing anything. K100, what the hell is going on here? I've also noticed that AEW media scrums, Tony would pour himself some water and react to it like he was drinking a strong whiskey. What the F is this guy doing? My answer to this is, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just it's probably a nervous tick during an interview. He needs something to do with his hands kind of thing. I don't know. But I agree. Even though I have no idea. I find it strange that this guy researched it and sent us clips. But I did notice during that Punk part of the scrum, the way he was gulping and drinking, I swore he had a cocktail from the way he was reacting. I thought he was having a little vodka on the rocks or something.
May have.
Yeah.
You never know. I mean, Nexus from David.
You ever seen it with Vince McMahon? Vince McMahon chooses water, pal.
Yes, he does.
This is interesting. David Barnett, subject is ring psychology. Hey, K100 crew. Rhino guards a specific spot of which Disco has repeatedly voiced his distaste for. To preface, I posit the following not as a criticism, but in the spirit of healthy debate. Okay, so the spot in question is a Japanese spot which wrestlers exchange forearms. Disco, I know you hate the logic and psychology of this spot because someone would never do this in a legitimate fight. Now, while I'll admit that this is a valid point, I disagree with it. It's entirely valid. First, psychology is subjective and differs greatly corresponding to culture as well as style and or disciplines. Disco, I believe your gripe with this spot is rooted in ethnocentric perspective. You perceive it through the lens of your traditional American pro wrestling conditioning. Again, not a personal knock. We're all products of our environment. I'm not immune to this. However, from the Japanese perspective, the spot is about honor, bravado, the will of the athlete, as well as a bit of masochism. To provide a relative comparison, how logical is the psychology of the headlock, shoot-off, tackle, drop-down, leapfrog, hip-toss spot? Would that ever occur in a legitimate fight? And why would anyone voluntarily drop to their belly and let someone jump over them? It's just as so entrenched in our American wrestling culture, the absurdity doesn't register with us. My question is this. Disco, are you willing to concede even to the slightest degree the forearm exchange isn't such a ridiculous spot, or would you rather submit a rebuttal? Okay, it is a ridiculous spot, and the rebuttal is, okay, if it's a Japanese perspective spot about honor, bravado, and the will of the athlete, why are American wrestlers doing it? You can answer that. We'll exchange this on a weekly basis. I'll throw that question back to you. Why would an American wrestler, okay, perform a spot that Japanese people do because it's about honor, bravado, and the will of the athlete? So that's you answer that question next week, and we'll continue this debate.
But if we just said that you have to accept that, you know, magic and stuff is a part of Lucha Libre culture, then why wouldn't you accept that that style is part of Japanese, the fighting spirit? That you got to accept that if you're going to, you know what I'm saying? And these guys are inspired by it.
Here's the biggest,
I don't like it. I'm just being devil's advocate.
Let me tell you something. And this is, you know, you can't even argue this, okay? American wrestlers, okay, get over in Japan at the highest levels. They get over in Mexico at the highest levels, okay, in great numbers. You know, you look at all Japanese wrestling tapes, you know, and the Americans were half of the guys in the history that were like the Hall of Famers and stuff, right? So my question is this. How many Japanese wrestlers and Mexican wrestlers get over at the highest levels here in the United States with wrestling the American style?
Well, Eddie, Ray.
Bro, you can count on five fingers.
Yeah.
Okay, there's like 100 American wrestlers that got over the highest levels and go and wrestle in Japan and Mexico stuff.
Yeah.
There has been, you can count on two hands the amount of Mexican wrestlers and Japanese wrestlers that have gotten over in the United States. Ben, would you agree with that, or am I off base here?
Yeah, and they get over usually because they do amazing springboard things like Phoenix and Penta do that you're not going to see a Killer Cross do, you know?
Right.
So it makes them special and a draw. Where in Mexico, every match, everybody's doing that. So you're not special on the card. That's the main difference. And the reason why white guys looking like Tom Cruise in The Last Samurai is because they're over in Japan, because they don't see a lot of Kuailo. They don't see a lot of white guys there. And it's the same in Mexico, or I won't say white guys, but Americans. All right. So, you know, from Europe or what have you. So that makes them special. And then they can pretend they're samurais. When you bring that shit back here, that's not what our wrestling is based on. So the American wrestler can go play make-believe in the foreign country and adapt to that style. But to bring it back here and try and put it into the real style of wrestling, you're going to be chastised for it, for trying to push something that goes against the greater overall style of wrestling, I guess. But to like go at the high spot drill of like, oh, does drop down, leapfrog, hip toss mean anything? Well, yeah, it does. But it's because the style's been bastardized. A drop down is not just like, let me hit the ground and let him run over me. Go watch your NFL. It's a marine or a submarine chop block is what it's supposed to be, as you go to chop the guy's legs out. But he's too athletic and jumps over you. You want to show you're athletic as he comes back to spear you, and you jump over the top of him, split leg that way. Come back, here comes momentum, and now I got you in a hip toss because I set you up. But you guys just see it as the, this is what we know from High Spot, because as fans, that's what we've been told. But the real artistry is someone should throw a drop down and trip somebody up and show that it is that actual offensive move in the first match. So later on in the main event, when they run the High Spot drill and he jumps over them, the crowd will be conditioned to it. But we don't play at that level.
Yeah. Next one, Bronson Hollins. And that's a good point, by the way. The subject is wrestling without a fix. Greetings, K100 crew. Hope all is good. I would like to get y'all's take on this conversation I was having with some family. Would it be a bad idea to take the fix out of wrestling? For example, if a new promotion started up that didn't have predetermined matches, could it work? Would people be drawn to it, or would it fail? I think it was treated with the same gloves as the UFC. It may pick up steam. Either way, thank you for your time and entertaining show, Bronson. You got to be licensed. You got to have. You can't just put on fighting. You have to have a license for that. You have to. Guys got to be licensed to do that. No, that's a dumb question.
Well, I'm sorry. What was the question he asked?
Like what? Taking the predetermined stuff out of matches. Well, that means it's that you're fighting for real then.
Yeah, it's, you know, if that was so popular, amateur wrestling would be, you know, on the level of pro wrestling.
Right, but it's not. Yeah, that's dumb. Next is from Theo Combo. It's the curious case of Karrion Kross's indifference. What's good, K100 crew?
Just by the way, just I'm sorry to interrupt you, but there's three Kross questions in a row here. So if you want to look at them all, and then
I'll read them all. Let's read them all. Okay. Just watched November 18th SmackDown, Kross and Moss in a decent 5 minute or so match. What I notice is a recurring theme from Kross is the indifference he's receiving from the live crowd. He's clearly a heel with zero heat, and he's got a dime piece who presents herself as a goddess. And that entrance there is one of the best currently. Even when the feud with McIntyre's heat was minimal, and it was simply because Drew is so over. As a Karrion Kross fan, my question is, have you all noticed what I have, and what can WWE do to the larger audience to care one way or the other? They're the complete package. The next question was, hello, gentlemen, is this... what is this? How would you book Kross to be a legit promo for Roman? Okay, and that's from Blade. And the next question is, Kross is Miro. In the morning, Miro or Miro? Mark Miro.
Mark Miro.
In the morning, gents, is it me? Or is Kross and Scarlett just a wish version of Mark Merrow's Sable? Do y'all have any memories of getting down with Johnny B. Badd and WCW? P.S. I'm using all my connections to try and get Disco in the Royal Rumble this year. That's from Adam DeMoy. Tony Schiavone's Japanese young boy, according to one of the
Let's go back to front. There's... In my mind, no comparisons between Karrion Kross and Mark Merrow, who I'm not disrespecting Mark or anything. They're just two completely different wrestlers, characters, everything.
Right, right. Kross is a very, here's the thing with Kross. He's a very well-defined character, okay, that defined his own character, okay? And it's very, and the what he does very well, okay, is present his character. Like he tells good stories, and if he gets a minute and a half to 2 minute promo, he does a very good 2 minute and a half to 2 minute promo. I mean, you know a lot about the guy and like where he's coming from and stuff, everything. So it's like when I talk about Kross is like this generation of fans, and because of Meltzer and stuff, everything, and the reason why AEW is like so, you know, underwhelming is because, bro, all these guys, all people do is care about the match. And we're going to look at the match. We're critics, and we've been reading the Observer. We know what good work is and stuff. And we're going to judge the match. But like the buildup, like the weekly television is what drives professional wrestling, not the wrestling matches. It's the storytelling, the vignettes, the promos, the facial expressions that tell stories, the acting and stuff. Everything. The matches like just a bridge to get to the next part of the storytelling. And it's like Kross does that, all those things very, very, very well, better than most of the people in this business. Is his work like? His work is. He's like a different guy. He's like he's big. It's like he shouldn't be getting, you know, beat up a lot, and he should be beating, you know, beating guys quick, because that's basically his story. Is a sadistic. His character is a sadistic killer type, you know. And I don't know. It's just like he had good heat in that cage match. I don't know what this guy's talking about. That was, I thought the crowd reaction where were they at? Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought the heat was fine in that match.
Oh, that's good. I threatened people if they didn't boo him that was going to hang him from cranes. The big heat with me, because I like Killer Kross to the nth degree. Got to shave that goddamn good looking hair. You got to go back.
It is kind of weird that he had the
beautiful head of hair.
Like, I need my badasses to be badass, not goddamn look at that nice wavy hair on that son of a bitch. The other thing that pisses me off, they commentary cannot get their words right. Scarlett is not a succubus, right? She is his muse. Muses have been around in mythology to the nth degree of time, from Greek mythology, and here we are not saying that she is a muse, the one that's in his head and why he does it and why he's successful because he's listening to her. I thought with Madcap, he looked too 50-50. He needs to be stronger. Give him just a little fire up until Cross goes crazy and ends him real fast. But he did choke him out, so I like that violence. And Cross is light years ahead of everybody else when it comes to promo character. He's right out of a new Batman movie, not the old school.
Well, I wonder if he's got the hair going because he may have a foot in the door to Hollywood.
It's not fair to be that jacked, good looking, and you got to give something up. You got to give the hair up.
I just wonder if like the hair is like appealing to, you know, Hollywood.
The guy is right out of, you know, central casting for so many roles that you would want. From military to Batman, man, the guy's got it. And where he doesn't have it yet, and he's, you know, physically gifted, a supreme human being, is he's probably at about 6,000-7,000 hours DI, would you say, in his 10,000 hour rule. And to get him to 10,000 hours, you want to put him with guys like Drew and Bobby Lashley, because he's only going to get better that much faster by working with people who are more seasoned than him. Putting him with Madcap Moss opens up the opportunity to, okay, we're both trying to get over on our own here, but we're not at that highest level yet. There's money on Madcap Moss too, but Killer Cross is your next Triple H when Triple H was on top at his highest level.
Well, this is what I told
him, and build him to that level.
This is advice I've given him before, and you can tell, like, Gunther does this, Sheamus does this. I say, dude, just lay your shit in and apologize later.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you have to just lay your shit in and apologize afterwards. You know, like, and then you can see that's the way Gunther and Sheamus work, you know, and like they're getting over, you know. So I was like,
but Sheamus has been around for, you know, 15 years or something. Is Cross too early on to start stiffen guys like that?
No, that's what I'm telling you. But that's what he needs to do.
Gotcha.
Right.
Yeah. And if somebody sticks him back, then you're going to be like, oh shit, I want to see him versus Brock.
Yeah, right. Right.
You know what I mean? That's what it is. Not like, oh, Madcap took him off his feet because Emma told Madcap that he's fast and he should use that against him. Like, he should try that. You get one, and Cross goes, what? And then now wants to break his fingers and pull his eye out of his head. Like, that's what.
Yeah. Next is from Leslie Sincere, and the subject is Natty, the backstage producer. What's good, K100 crew and Joe? It's your boy, Les. Natty's currently out doing a stiff blow to the nose from Shayna Baszler and had to get sick. Really? That was a shoot, huh?
No.
Oh,
they worked that because she had to have some, I think, deviated septum surgery.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. At this point in her career, is Natty really putting butts in seats? Her time is up. She just turned 40 back in May and would be a better agent producer than an in-ring talent. My question is for Conan Disco. Do you guys feel Natty should hang up her boots? Plus, with the WWE increasing their women's division, what ideas would you present Hunter to keep the division relevant? First of all, I have no clue whatsoever they broke her and Tamina up. I mean, were they having issues with each other personally? Maybe that's why. I thought they were a good, refreshing tag team because they had a clumsy, like viciousness to the two of them. Like they looked big. They're kind of decent size, and they were clobbering.
Both second generation, and the mama bears of the locker room, and they could have. That's the story, right? To see who's the dominant female.
Well, they should have kept them strong, and then you got Ronda and Shayna Baszler. Now, that's kind of like a magic that type of feud could draw if you made Tamina and Natty back like in a kind of like the Twin Towers again, like, you know, like they were sort of, you know.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
Let me see.
But I will commend them for taking a surgery, making it look like a shot, and then using social media to further the story. So I tip my hat to him that way.
Well, they fooled this guy.
Did you hear or read rumors that Natty was being a little, maybe, or they're putting him out there, outspoken backstage because of where she was on the card or how much time, or was there some issues in the last couple months with kind of big league in a little bit, and could this be payback from that?
I didn't hear anything. I don't get involved in all that shit. So, next is from Eric Schultz. The subject is MJF Part of My Take interview. Hey, K100 crew. Was writing about the MJF interview with Barstool Sports podcast Pardon My Take. Interview is good, but notice a trend in the Twitter comments and Facebook clip comments. Most sports fans do not like wrestling. Duh. MJF got people worked up over taking shots at Buffalo, but it wasn't I wanted to see this guy get his ass whipped heat. It was, who is this snow buddy, and oh, he's one of those bullshit wrestlers heat. What are all your thoughts, as even when ESPN posts WWE clips, the people who watch sports but not wrestling have the same response? Should wrestling try to present itself more as a TV show than a sport, since most people don't view it as a sport? Thanks. Yeah, like, bro, the thing that attracted sports fans to professional wrestling was characters. Okay, just like in sports, when you have a superstar, it's kind of like a character. Dennis Rodman was a character.
Muhammad Ali, James is kind of a Mike Tyson.
They're larger than life characters, and that's what sports
Mayweather.
Fans are attracted to about wrestling. The larger than life characters. They don't care. They don't look at it as a sport. But like, you know, when you see the guys doing the, you know, the Indianapolis Colts doing the Ric Flair thing after their game, you know, well, that was, you know, jet flying. So like, bro, that's what they like about it. Not the actual wrestling. They like the promo.
You want to go from the undercard to a title shot in UFC? Yeah. Dye your hair every color in the rainbow, or right. Be a MAGA guy like Colby Covington,
yeah,
which
I was going to say
we had a very big hand in helping out Stevie Richards and I did with that with Hartnett and American Top Team. So that, like, all you got to do is take what they're not doing in wrestling and put it into your TV, and then what wrestling can learn. Look at every week there's NFL controversy. Somebody gets busted with a DUI. They're talking about it all week long, right? On all the talking head shows. Jeff Hardy, something goes down. Nobody say shit. Nobody say anything on wrestling. No controversy whatsoever. Somebody gets fired and kicked out. All we do is say one little thing about Sasha and Jay's wife. I can't think of her name. Forgive me.
Jeez, I can't either.
Funkadactyl.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, as a glow up, god damn it, it's all on the tip
Naomi.
Of my tongue.
Naomi,
like, should be a story going on that, wow, the women's division's really changed since Naomi and Sasha had walked out here, so it's going to be a new day. Instead, we just turn Nikki Ash into the Hamburglar and expect everything to be fine instead of talking about the real game moves that are going on in real life, man. The NFL has real drama that affects how things go that next week. Wrestling will have real drama and go, shh, let's not talk about the fight at AEW backstage, everybody. Let's not reference it. We'll just strip them of the titles instead of saying this could be the thing that is the iceberg to our Titanic of a company right here.
Next is from Buffalo, from Woven, and the subject is Buffalo venue change. Hey crew, just wondering your thoughts on Buffalo requesting and granting permission to move their home game during a 6-foot snowstorm to Detroit's Ford Field. Some are saying it's for the safety of the fans traveling, others saying Cleveland's strong wrestling game would have an incredible advantage. Just seems like another example of further pussification of the game. I was wondering your thoughts on the matter. Dude, there was 6 feet of snow. I mean, what are you, like, this is not, people couldn't get to the game. So they had to go, and the thing was they're playing in Detroit this week too. So that was the most logical place. There was Detroit wasn't playing there, and they were going to have a game there on Thursday. So they already had it set up for the teams to come in. So yeah, that was just who thought that was a conspiracy there? First of all, Buffalo doesn't really have a very good rushing game beyond Josh Allen. So that's like, you know, that's like, that makes no, that I'm almost want to suspend that guy for misinformation in that.
This is Sunday in upstate New York, guys. I don't know where you live or where you're from, or if you understand how snow can happen here in a snow bomb. This is my old man in the driveway on the four-wheeler out pushing 36 inches that fell in 24 hours. Jesus. And Buffalo is 3 hours away from where I'm at. And they got they got that, and then they got 3 more feet on top of it. I went to school there, and in 97, there was one of these snow bombs that went off. And in 2 days, we got 54 inches of snow. The highway shut down. No one can travel. No, like, your back street that you live on in your neighborhood might not get plowed for 2 or 3 days. People have to have groceries delivered by snowmobile. Like, I'm not sure if you understand what it really is. Would an awesome snow game been cool to watch? Absolutely, bro. But the highway is shut down. There's nobody coming in or going out for 60 miles either way.
Next one is from Jared Aviat. Subject is comparing Triple H and Jeff Jarrett. Hi, K100 fam. Hope everyone is doing okay. Wish you all the best with your current health problems, Conan. I hope you get through this. I want to ask the crew your thoughts on comparisons between Triple H and Jeff Jarrett. I know it's a tricky question since you've not worked with Triple H behind the scenes, but you have with Jeff. I know that you likely know Jeff better personally, but how would you compare the respective tenures as wrestling bookers, producers, and on-screen performers? Back in the early 2000s, both men were hated online and message boards, as many fans felt both men were pushing themselves to the top of the card and outstaying their welcome. For me, I was always a fan of Triple H as main eventer and always enjoyed his work as far better than Jarrett. I never thought Jarrett fit as a main event guy at any point in his career, but yes, how would you compare the legacies of both men? This is no disrespect personally, because I've actually met him and found him to be engaging and generous at this time. Thank you. Regards, Jarrett. They're both just very high IQ guys in this business. You know, like right near the top. Like I've learned more from Jeff Jarrett than anybody. Like the guy like wrestled territories for years, wrestled WWE territory for years. Just like the guy has been doing it, and he's a second generation wrestler, and he just knows about promoting, booking. Just like there's so many little details of things I never would have thought of that I learned from Jeff, and I'm sure Triple H is the same way. We're working under, you know, under Vince. You just learn things that just you just gain this wealth of knowledge that you just can't really get from hardly anybody else in this business, you know? And I think that's what their legacies would be in my book.
Yeah, and Triple H, to me, that, I mean, even though Jeff is second generation and grew up in it, Triple H, they are the business. Both these guys loved it. He came up through Killer Kowalski, paid all the dues, wasn't handed anything, had to be the young boy for – you know, click and got over, and now look to the point of where he is. That's all the way up the wrestling mafia mountain, you know, for both of them. And Jeff can keep coming back to every company. He leaves one company and you show up in the next one, he leaves that one and then on to the next one, because he knows what he's doing, and you're not going to outwork either of those guys. They've seen it all.
Yeah. He's like, you know, like perfect example, like Bruce Arians on Tampa Bay. They still keep him around as a consultant,
mm-hmm.
You know, like, cause just, bro, you just want to have the guy around, you know, for the knowledge, you know what I'm saying? So that's why he always gets work.
Allegedly.
Next is from Aaron Valverde, and the subject is AEW fans. Hey guys, Valverde from San Antonio. Here's my question this week. It's about AEW fans. Seen as WWE over years of bad, lazy booking turned massive amounts of fans to hate the company. How much time do you think AEW has before their fan base turns on them? Clearly, Tony Khan is only booking what he enjoys. Just my opinion, but that's a bad business strategy. Keep on keeping it 100. Oh, and Conan, maybe you can teach Disco how to pronounce my name. He butchered it last time. Is Hispanic. Valverde. Their fans will never really turn on them. It's kind of, but it is kind of weird that this type of fan base, right? In 1 year, we went from CM Punk coming back to showing a fan's crying in the audience and everything, to 1 year later and there's FCM Punk chants at the show. Like this, this is the type of people that this fam, that they draw. Just a very weird bunch of people that only like wrestling, only like AEW wrestling, will defend the pro, like it'll do a bad rating. And if you say if you're given a review of the show, why the rating did bad, it's like you're a hater. I'm like, no, I'm not a hater. I'm trying to explain why the number isn't good. It's like, you know, it's like they just, and they think that they know more than the people that have been in the business. That's the most bizarre thing about this fan base, because they read Dave Meltzer. You know, yeah. They read the dirt sheets and they think that the dirt sheet guys know more about this business than I do. You know, which is fascinating. So
it kind of seems.
How's that working out for him?
It kind of seems like I just thought of this, that AEW and Tony Khan's response to criticism is almost like the Biden administration. Like there was a reporter that asked Biden after the midterms, like, hey, 72% of Americans polled say they don't like what you're doing with this, this, or this. What are you planning to change to address their concerns? And Biden went, nothing. So right. That's almost like AEW, where, hey, this group of fans doesn't like this shit. Oh, well, our fans do.
Yeah, they play to their base, yeah. And their base will just, you know, as long as the fans will never turn. The fans are stupid. Okay, like this is the AEW fan base is the lowest IQ fan base of like there's a lot of genres on social media, but like the wrestling fan base is like a very like this fan base is very low IQ, right? All it would really take is for the dirt sheet guys to start being more critical of them and criticizing them, kind of like the way we do, and they'll turn on them. Because the fans just like are just brainwashed, and you know that like everything. I don't know. This is a very weird bunch of people that I have nothing in common with. So
I think it'll happen at an accelerated rate. I don't think you're going to recover from this bad PR of Punk and the Bucks, no matter how much you try and do it. And there's something in the American DNA where we love to jump on something and find it and make it, well, it's pure in the underground. Then it sells out to the mainstream and we go, I knew about that before any of you guys did, so we can take a sense of pride in it. And then we look at the product when it's for the mainstream and go, it was way better before everybody else jumped on it. And right. then we start hating it. And then we take our hero that we built up and had pride in and tear them all the way down so we can stand over them and go, see, you were no better than me the whole time. And that is exactly how all of this works.
It's like Metallica. Metallica fans, they loved them when they were the underground shred and metal band. As soon as they started making videos and more mainstream music, fan base got pissed, you know.
And then what happened with Napster?
Yeah, that turned people off.
And this is exactly the model that is encoded in our DNA.
Next is from Mark Warburton, and the subject is Madison Rain's the coach. Hey guys, not sure if you discussed this lately, but I find it weird that Madison Rain is being referred to as the AEW Women's Coach on TV as she actually competes within the division. I get that we all know it's a work, but come on. Can we keep just a little bit of kayfabe instead of basically saying we have a coach and we're all on the same team here at the same time as trying to get fans invested in the matches and storylines? Do you agree that this is absolutely ridiculous, or am I missing something in the logic? Thanks as always, Mark from Canada. I haven't heard her mentioned on the show, so I don't know. When was the last time she was on? I only watched Dynamite. When was the last time she was on Dynamite?
When she wrestled Serena.
That's it? How long ago was that?
About 3 months ago.
Whatever.
I was at the show and Serena to her face, like, you ready, coach? Because what people don't know is Serena was the coach and is, along with Billy Gunn and others. And, you know, I think Madison Rain did a great job, actually, in Impact. When she was on commentary, I was very impressed. You know, I'm not going to say surprised. I was impressed with how she brought it as a veteran of the locker room and was doing great color work back and forth, even if she was ribbing Josh Matthews or whoever it was. Yeah. So to see them put her in the ring, which I'm not trying to be a dick here, but maybe a little past her prime or ring rust because she wasn't doing it in Impact that way. And now you're going to say she's the coach and she's probably not one of your top five workers of women. That, again, makes you kind of look foolish as management, and you're not protecting her for what she is. You know, I'm not saying anything bad against her. She's been lovely every time I've met her, and she gets it. Of course she's going to take a job of what they're offering, but it's not the best look to put that out there and then have your coach beat. So what does your coach mean if you're coaching talent and they're getting beat on camera, you know?
Yeah. Next is from Sangana Chanko, and the subject is NXT 2.0 versus Black and Gold. I skipped that one email joke because it was a question for Conan. It was short. So,
okay.
Hey, K100 crew, hope you're all doing well. I know some people have been against some of the returns of WWE the past few months, but I honestly think the roster does need some new faces and, more importantly, some depth. However, I want to ask you guys if you guys think he's too reliant on his old NXT Black and Gold talent. I know you guys don't review or watch NXT anymore, but personally, I think it would serve Triple H better to invest more time into developing those guys and girls in the main roster than bringing back people like Matt Cardona or Chelsea Green or Bronson Reed. Give those spots to Bron Breakker, Carmelo Hayes, Odyssey Jones, and Tiffany Stratton. But what do you think is better, to rely on the experience and familiarity of this former NXT talent or give some opportunities to brand new faces? I just don't think they bring those guys up until they think they're ready for the show. Like, they think they're probably still a little bit green, you know? Because Bron Breakker should be on the main roster. You know,
you think Dakota Kai is ready for main roster?
Not really. Okay. I think that Damage Control is the most underwhelming group that gets more TV time that I've seen in recent memory. So
we are in control now.
I just think that they think those guys are just a little bit still a little bit green. That's why they haven't brought them up.
Sorry, D.I. What do you use for those sounds, Ben? Is that the what's that called?
This is the Rodecaster from Rode Technologies, one of the best Aphex processing boards with a great sampler bank in it. And you know, if 20 years ago, this would have been a $5,000-$6,000 piece of equipment, and now you can get one for about $550-$600. So if you're interested in podcasting producing, I can't recommend it enough. It's an unbelievable piece of equipment.
Do you think I should upgrade to the Rodecaster DI and start playing some sound effects on here?
Sure, why not?
Let's do it.
I mean, to be honest with you, dude, reach out to Stevie and see if you can get the email, because the Rode is very cool, especially with the podcast community, and they might send you one for free. I got this one. So
wow.
I were put over road, and you send them the nice email and give them a plug for 3 months, and you got a free one probably.
I'll check it out. Next
one, Beto Garcia. The subject is cakes. Evening, Jens. It's your homeboy from the 415 and on Discord known as G4150351. Okay. Since you're all connoisseurs of plump rumps, who are your current top five wrestling pogs? Keep up the dope work. Stay mentally and physically unhealthy.
Now, is that fat-ass white girls, right?
Yeah, fat-ass white girls. Okay, I don't even know. I mean, how many pogs are there?
Tony Storm, Paige Van Zandt.
Paige Van Zandt's a pog?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Really?
She's a UFC fighter.
She's got a big butt, man. It's a fact.
Verifiable fact.
You got to go.
I don't know who else.
You got to go hater. Tony Storm over there. And then you got to definitely go the chick in NXT with the big donkey on her.
What's her, Nikita?
She's probably number one.
I would say she's probably number one.
And I probably wouldn't say this, but I'm really not as scared of him because he has a beautiful head of hair. So Scarlett, you know, like if he was bald, I probably wouldn't say that.
And lesser known is Sky Blue. Sky Blue.
Oh my God. Next is from M. Garcia. The subject is ACW original Tommy Dreamer. Hello, gentlemen. Listeners, since day one, I've left a clip of Tommy Dreamer's podcast where he interviewed Masha Slamovich.
Yeah.
Who? He has some very interesting comments about the 21:30 minute mark. Worry not, because the clip is only about 30 seconds. I was hoping to get your opinions on discussion. Here's the link. Go ahead and play it, Joe.
21:30, he said?
Yeah, 21:30 mark.
With one blood. I also get it with. We used to call it being addicted to the blade.
Whoa.
Now it's a lot more, you know, blood in the sense. I mean, it's always been real blood, but like,
Turn this clip off.
I knew it. I knew that was a term.
Yeah, from Tommy Dreamer, the guys that bleed all over themselves in ECW. That was never like an industry wide term. That was like your Philly CZW, Tommy Dreamer, you know, whatever. But we're going to suspend this guy, M. Garcia, from the mailbag for that.
What am I missing?
Ben, if you're not aware from a mailbag question 1 week, they asked about Moxley bleeding all the time. And I used the term addicted to the blade. And Conan and Disco said, what the fuck is that? I've never heard that before. That's a mark term, whatever. So I went ahead and made an addicted to the blade t-shirt just as a joke. And
you tried to make it sound like it was like an industry wide, like a lot of people have heard that term before.
Ben,
it was basically
Ben, you've never
Philly, CZW, ECW, you know, so whatever.
You haven't heard that in widespread usage, right, Ben?
No, I'm in the Northeast. I haven't, but that's not to say that it won't be a big seller on the Get My Go Pro Wrestling.
He sold four t-shirts.
Yeah, and a European t-shirt, so he bootlegged it. Horrible.
They bootlegged the term.
They sold four. All four guys who host the show, they all bought one.
Okay, here we go. This is from Brendan Triano, and the subject is racism as a black man. Hello, guys. It's the mayor.
Oh, the mayor.
I want to speak on a topic you guys touched on the recent K100 talks. Disco was saying how stupid it was for people to think it's racist to ask minorities for IDs to vote. I agree with Disco. There's actually a great video where a dude interviews college students on campus about this, and they overwhelmingly thought this was racist. Then the guy goes to the hood, and all the black people thought it was stupid enough and said, why wouldn't I want to show my ID to vote? I always have it on me. It's crazy how people like to feel offended for others and project this nonsense that, quite frankly, is racist in itself. I work as an HVAC tech, so I go to homes all day. The amount of people who are overly nice to me that have the liberal ideology billboards on the front lawn because I am black is annoying and racist, in my opinion. I'd rather have someone be racist up front than smile in my face, give me a tip, just because I am the victim. Have you guys seen or heard this type of experience I've had in your circles? Thanks. No, you did, bro. The whole racism thing is coming from white middle-aged liberals, and they're the ones being offended for people that they think they're supposed to should be offended. And the thing about it is, but bro, think about this. You're literally trying to say that black people are kind of like a lower class of people that don't understand the process of what it takes to go get an ID. That's racist to ask them to go get an ID. The process of getting an ID is getting in your car or taking the bus, going to the DMV, standing in the line, paying the money, getting your picture taken, getting the ID. Well, I mean, it's the same process for everybody.
It has nothing
It has nothing to do with race. It's just such a stupid argument. I'm like, what? Okay, that's another thing explained. Asking for voter ID is racist. Like I say, okay, explain the process. How is it racist? How is it difficult to get an ID?
Did you say, and is he misquoting you, that it's for minorities are the ones that need to do it. Because wasn't that what it said in the order? Because my only argument was, why minorities? That's everybody. You're talking about, not you, but in this email, about classification of minorities that need to prove it, because it's obviously either, you know, poor African-American is what you're alluding to, I think, in your own demographic of people, or is it illegal aliens that they're trying to stack coming across the border from Honduras? Like, that's what I believe probably Disco's argument was. But regardless, this is about being a citizen of the U.S. to want to participate in the democratic voting process. It has nothing to do with like marginalizing a person or a specific group. So if you can't put yourself forward to go, I want to be a part of this, and get that little bit done, then it's not worth it to you to vote or have a voice out there. No one's trying to subvert anybody's race or ethnicity and make them mean less by doing that, saying, no, you have to get an ID. Yeah, you fucking got to get one. Are you an American or aren't you? No, then you don't get to vote. That's how she wrote.
Not even that. You can't buy booze. Can't drive.
Can't rent a car.
Look at all the things you can't do without an ID. Like, you shouldn't be able to get an ID.
Shouldn't be able to rent an apartment. Can't get a bank account. You know, like,
can't work.
If you can't name all fucking members of the Wu-Tang Clan, I don't even want to hear shit about being black.
You can't cash a paycheck. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Next is from CC. The subject is fraud. Conan, the patent book was excellent. The book title here explains what's been happening in PA for a long time. This is how the Dems hold power in Pennsylvania will forever. Gregory Stenson, the parallel election, a blueprint for deception. All right, my question is, what is your take on all election fraud being swept under the rug? Trump asked in 2016 after he won for a voter fraud investigation in the two big states of Pennsylvania and Michigan. There's no law and order across the country in this issue. Politicians equal POS. Love the show.
Let me just say first, as far as bringing up voter fraud or election fraud, and now it's like totally taboo to talk about it, really, that's an American tradition. Like, do people not know any of their history? Like, it's been alleged for years that the Kennedys stole the election from Nixon in 1960. There was the problems in 2000 in Florida, you know, all the way up to Hillary accusing Trump of stealing it in 2016. So that was all cool. But when you flip it around and, you know, in these days, you try to accuse the Democrats or whatever.
CIA backs the governor of California, who's a movie actor, to run for 8 years.
Yeah.
And his vice president's the former head of the CIA. You guys think this gangster shit hasn't been happening since the beginning of time? You're fooling yourself. You live in a Hallmark movie to think that OG prohibitionists who backed Nazis to cash in twice, and then you want to get into the anti-Semitic talk or call people Nazis, you know, you fucking mark, you're just not getting it all the way around of the actual life you've lived in. You want to look at something, go look up Dwight D. Eisenhower's shoot on who we shouldn't put this country in the hands of defense contractors and secret societies. Look at JFK wanting to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces, and that the secret societies that own this country are the ones that are really doing it. But you can't come out and say anything, because otherwise, anti-Semitism, don't you know it?
Yeah.
So, like, this little fantasy reality that the woke culture wants to create of some Leave It to Beaver bullshit is what they can hang their hats on for Full House or whatever they want for TGI Fridays. But that ain't the way shit's been done in the last 100 to 200 years ever. Because before that, we were smoking Indians and leaving bodies stacked miles high while we killed buffalo, bro. Yep. So, like, get your shit together on what's really going down. Because if you can look at wrestling as a work and a fantasy, but you're still going to live in this fantasy world over here, you got to start waking up to what really goes on in this planet, bro.
Boom.
Next one's from Brian Dunlap, and the subject is Dave Meltzer's number one ranked Christian Cage match. Hello, Conan and Disco. Out of all the classics of Christian Cage's career, the one match that Dave Meltzer gives a 5-star rating is a Falls Counts Anywhere Trios match at Full Gear 2021. The match featured Christian, Luchasaurus, and Jungle Boy versus the Super Click, aka Adam Cole and the Young Bucks. This ranked out above all Christian's tag team work with Edge during the Attitude Era. According to Meltzer, this is ranked above anything Christian has ever done as either a singles or tag team wrestler. Do you agree or disagree with Meltzer's ratings? And why do you think he would rank this match above all of Christian's top matches? Is this really better than the multi-team TLC matches he was involved in? And would you rather see that Full Gear match or Edge and Christian versus the Dudleys versus the Hardy Boys? It's fascinating that people still listen to Dave for, you know, advice on work. Like Conan still listens to him and stuff. I've seen him give 4.5 stars to stuff that had so many fake looking spots in it that like negative 4.5 stars would have been the rating back in, you know, 20 years ago. Like if guys were doing stuff that these guys are doing in the ring, you wouldn't, everybody, you come to the back and we go, what are you doing? You wouldn't be on TV. The funniest thing about this is that, I tweeted this like I did a tweet recently where I said after I didn't watch the AEW pay-per-view, right? But I tweeted AEW just like continues to book for their audience and they're never going to grow. If you actually think, and I wonder if Dave thinks that I bet Dave had a hand in this, right? But if you actually think, and I'd put a considerable amount of money on this, right? That you're going to get one new fan. I say you're not going to get even one new fan from a best of seven trio series with the Elite versus the Pentagon, the Death Triangle, which is their next big thing they got going. And like basically all they're doing this for is so Dave can rate these matches and give them 4.5 and 5 stars, and him and Alvarez when the series is over with, they can go, boy, yo, 4 and 6 were really good, but two was like an underrated match. It's like of all the matches in the series, like so they can talk about it like that. So fucking stupid, bro. That's like, I mean, seriously, that's the way they talk about this shit. You know, and like it's so nerdy, it's so off-putting. Like nobody gives a rat's ass. Like, what's the point of doing that? You know, we're having a best of seven trio series with Death Triangle versus, you know, the Elite.
I'll put $20 down on it right now if you want to take the other side that they don't make it to seven. That right. There'll be at least 1 to 2 sidelining injuries from getting your shit in and doing some dumb shit around match 3 or 4, and we'll never get to 7. And quick check. Can somebody tell me who trained Dave Meltzer to give anybody a rating on a match? Who was his? No, oh, nobody trained him. What are the star ratings based on? Are they based on a babyface's fire and comeback? How vicious a heel's heat is? Was the double down intuitive and interesting? How did they get over in their entrance? What was the finish? Did they hit it at the right time and give the people what they wanted, or was it a swerve that carried the story? Is that how he's rating it, or does he go, "Wow, Falcon's arrow or superplex to Falcon's arrow kick out"? Five stars.
I hate that so much.
These assholes don't know what they. At least I can't go in on Alvarez because he was trained by Buddy Wayne.
Yeah.
Right. So Alvarez has better take on work than Dave does.
Yeah. Well, he knows what's going on.
Right, because he's done it before. Right? Yeah. So the funny thing about it is,
listens to Dave about the quality or star. You're listening to an amateur who's never done it, who has no idea. I wanted to pitch this to you. I might have even sent an email, but Jericho, a friend of the show here, obviously, I saw him pitch that shouldn't wrestling possibly be in the Olympics because it's a performance art, much like figure skating and whatnot. But they just don't have any asshole off the street judging figure skating. It's former figure skaters. Right. This is where I could see DI and other guys being Olympic judges if we ever get to the level of what it is, who can really, actually, for the first time, give X amount out of 10 stars, and it will really mean something because the people who are the professionals at it are looking at it with a critical eye.
So the one thing that you can look at Dave's what you can if you looked at metrics on if you looked at Dave's ratings for matches and did studies on them, you would just come to the conclusion that Dave likes the stuff that doesn't draw. Like, and that's basically what the numbers say.
Let's keep listening to him and book for him, because if we go for the metric, everything he likes doesn't draw. So let's do that more. How's that going to fucking work out for
him? Hank Beanie is going to get a suspension, Joe, because this is his second email. So, I guess this was, he sent one in last Tuesday, but we're going to read it, which we're going to suspend him from next week because we're going to read both of them today.
Got it.
Subject is Austin Theory. And hey, guys, since Triple H took over WWE Creative, Austin Theory has been converted from one of the rising stars of the company to a guy that pretty much jobs to everyone. After one of the weakest cash-ins in the company history, Jim Cornette and others called out Triple H for his handling of Theory. Yesterday on Raw, they changed Theory's character into an angry, unhinged persona. That was last week, by the way.
Yeah.
What are they doing with him? Makes no sense. What do you guys think about Triple H's handling of Austin Theory, and how do you think he should be booked? That's from Handsome Hank. I don't think that makes no sense. I mean, the kid's punk. He's been called out, and he looks like $1 million. And this past last Monday, before he did that thing where he beat up Dolph Ziggler, he cut a great promo.
Yeah.
It was a very good promo. They kind of like, you know, Syria. And I was like, bro, this 1 week, I liked it. I'm giving the guy a chance. He's definitely talented. And I had said, like, you know what, like we were talking about me and Conan like months ago, why are they pushing this guy so much? It's like Vince. And I'm just wondering if, like, he kind of looks like, you know, like what John Cena was 20 years ago.
Yeah. This so is
like,
your
like if you're the prototype, okay, look, this guy looks the part of like our next John Cena. So let's just start pushing because he's got the face, the body. He's just like, look, he looks like the next John Cena. So it's like, let's try to see if he can become the next John Cena. You know, and maybe Triple H said, well, he's not the next John Cena. And like he started beating him, but it's like, you know, I don't know. I'd like to know what the booking meeting conversations have been around this guy, you know?
Something happened in the being Vince's boy and doing that type of stuff to like try and test him and humble him on camera, but they effed up the business. He can lose every match as long as he's got the money in the bank as the threat for the chicken shit to come in and pick the bones when the time is right, when the champ is down. However, to have him go after the mid-card title on a non-pay-per-view, and it's also an open challenge, to me, that's fuck you booking. Because that doesn't do anything to like elevate his character, storyline, character arc.
I agree with you when it was taking place. Like that made no sense.
Yeah.
I liked the explanation, though.
Well, that's after the fact, right?
Well, I said after the fact, but the explanation made some sense, in my opinion. So I'll give them a pass on that, seeing what they do with this guy going forward. Well, I'm not a fan of
lowered or higher because of that, after that terrible choice. After the choice of having him cash in, lose, and then rib him about the worst, you know, thing ever. Like, if he did it and lost, that can be the inciting incident to drive him mad. Yes, yes. Instead, we're just turning onto a new character and hoping that it catches.
Well, and then let's not forget, they are billing this guy as like the youngest guy on the roster. Like, mm-hmm. He's the kid. You know what I'm saying? So he's like, and it's good what they like what they did with Dominic and what they're doing with him. They're making these young kids the punks. You know, like the characters are kind of punks, you know, which is like kind of like what kids are these days to look at by the older guys. So I'm gonna see where it goes. You know,
yeah. I've been an advocate of the guy. Like Russo saw no money on him. I'm like, and Stevie and I are both like, nah, dude. Everyone wants Cena to turn heel. Here's your opportunity to build a heel Cena. But we're not like something happened in, like 4 weeks ago or 5 weeks ago in the Triple H decision to not carry on the right way and test him. The creative does not line up. Something politically is happening that has thwarted him back off the rails of elevating to where he was going.
Well, plus two, let's not pretend that a guy carrying around a suitcase every show is looks so stupid. You know,
I can say just real quick, as a fan, and I'll align more with Russo on this than Ben and Stevie, is that I found Theory to be way more interesting since he, you know, added this vicious streak and everything like that than I did before. I didn't really find him that interesting at all before that, you know, so it's working for me.
Yeah.
The cash in was stupid, though. That was brutal. Right.
Joe, so next is banned from the mailbag for 2 weeks, Joe, after
Next is from Jared Avion. The subject is Conan loves these names. Jared's going to get a suspension because this is submitted last Tuesday. Jared, you got to get these in by Sunday or Monday at the very latest, because we usually record the mailbag on Monday, okay? Conan loves these names. Hi, K100 fam. Hope everyone's doing well. With the recent release of Ru Feng, the cheesy presentations of Wendy Chu, a.k.a. Dashi Fu, and Boa Lu, a.k.a. Yambo Wang, what are the hopes of my boy from Homeland, Dante Chen? Will he survive being the first Singaporean WWE superstar ever? Would love your thoughts on him and how the Asian talents are presented overall in NXT. Thank you. Hope Conan enjoyed the names as he used to. Best, that's from Jared. I've never heard of any of those people. And the Asian women are projected like they're spastic morons.
You know Wendy Chu. Wendy Chu came out and wrestled in her pajamas or whatever.
So we saw that one time. I don't know. For some reason, like if you're a Japanese character, like a female character, we have to marry you to like anime. Like, oh, Japanese anime, that's a thing. So let's make the character look like a Japanese anime character. And like all the characters look like Japanese anime characters, like or schoolgirls. It's like I don't get it. You know, it's like, I mean, look at Wenlu. Who's the chick that just knocked out the girl in the choked out the girl in the UFC for the Chinese girl? Wenli Jin. Yeah. Why can't you have just a Chinese badass? Like, you know, I don't know. Whatever.
ですか。
当たり前だろ、ジャパニーズ喋るに決まってんの。お前頭おかしいんか。
日本語喋れんねや、知らんかったわ。
当たり前だ。
あ、すごいすごいすごい。
I mean, why? Why do they do? I mean, why do the girls submit to doing that?
Probably.
Why would they sit that say like this is I'm not doing
the main
that.
Reason behind it is
Japanese.
Next is from Nick M, and the subject is Chavito Heat. Hey, K100 crew, love the show. I was wondering, have you guys ever invited Chavo Guerrero to come on the show and chop it up? He could be a great guest, considering he's right there with Disco and Conan and WCW at the time, and probably has some great stories to tell. Not to mention, if he's still promoting with Alberto Del Rio of Mexico, coming on the show would be a great way to promote the shows and drive fans to them. Thanks for reading my question. We don't take suggestions, but Chavito is a guy that we'd probably like to have on the show.
Yeah, I'd like to hear about his all of his work behind the scenes on and everything with all the TV shows and movies. I'm sure he's gotten a lot more knowledge to share. Absolutely. I'm a little not triggered by it, but have you guys ever heard of the band The Mountain Goats and the album Beat the Champ?
No.
It's like a folk rock group or folk punk group kind of, but it's a whole wrestling album. I'll DM it to you, DI, but there's a song called The Ballad of Chavo Guerrero. It's about Chavo Guerrero Sr. on there, but there's a lot of damn cool wrestling songs on there that aren't like your normal Mark wrestling anthems. They're very well written and thought out.
Next is from Arizona Fever, and the subject is Nash Carter WWE Return. Hey guys, I love your show. With Triple H in control and rehiring some of WWE talent, do you think there's a chance that Nash Carter will return in the WWE? I love MSK and they were a fun tag team since I saw them in Impact as the Rascals. There was no proof of any allegations that was made by the ex-wife nor any reports made by the cops of the so-called alleged abuse except making accusations on social media. All it is about a vindictive woman who can't accept that Nash Carter move on with someone else, which I heard that he is dating Gigi Dolan. From what I heard, his coworkers adore him and there's nothing bad to say about him, and I feel bad for him getting fired over a photo that was taken when he was a teenager. Seems that Impact Wrestling and AEW hasn't signed him as well. I know nothing about this story.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this.
Anything about Nash Carter?
I liked his work with the Rascals. I thought they were great in Impact. And then he's with, was with, what's his wife's name? She's a worker too. And she was at Impact, and she was the one blonde who left, and then all this kind of spilled over, and you know, everyone looks kind of cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I guess there was him with a Hitler mustache as he shaved one day, and like all these a text message she claims he's abusive. I don't really care.
Her name's Kimberly.
Kimberly, thank you. And then other friends doing he said she said. Well, whereas here's what it comes down to: you don't shit where you eat. You want to fuck around in the wrestling industry, chances are it's going to go real bad for you, bro. Especially if you're messing with a worker, because nobody's naive in this shit. Where a worker can get over on a civilian woman and do what he needs to do, you're not going to be able to get over on any female in the locker room that way. So it can get real ugly real quick, and you work your ass off to get to WWE, and the last thing you want is to bring them negative PR, because they will cut your ass double quick because they can replace you in a second. So having somebody as your significant other in this business is a big liability, and you got to be on the same page of kayfabe, don't say nothing. If we got problems, it goes down at home. And when it boils over, now everybody's career is screwed.
Next one's from Amit Singh Jockey, and the subject is Indian stars and pro wrestling. Hello, K100 team. Greetings from India. Longtime listener of the show, only on YouTube. Why is there reluctance to push Indian stars in pro wrestling right now on TV? We're all excited for Veer and Shanky. Both are almost absent. The other guy, Sangha, is stuck on NXT. Shira is doing nothing in TNA, and the same is with Satnam, who will do anything but wrestle. They pushed Jinder to the moon when he had flaws all over him. We've been the biggest audience for pro wrestling ever since the great Khali popped up in WWE. Kindly comment on this and post it on YouTube. We'd love to hear your views on this, and as always, thanks for keeping it 100. Regards, that's Amit Singh. I don't know. I thought the Shanky thing with Jinder was actually the kid dancing out there was getting over a little bit. It was silly, but like he was getting a good pop. I don't know.
Yeah, dude, he's got charisma and freakishly long arms. Bro from India, big shout out, because I've said this same thing. What the hell is going on? What the hell's going on with these goddamn Indians? We got giant Indians everywhere, bro.
Right.
On AEW, this guy's confirmed Nephilim pretty much, the size of the Indian guy they got there. and we got Sanjay Dutt. How about Hakeem Zayn? Phenomenal worker, great on the mic. Mahabali Shira is with Al Snow and OVW, and they're booking him the right way, but it seems like they can't get him over on TV, even though he's a freak show of an awesome athlete as well. And this goes back to when WWE went to India to get Jinder over as the big heel, and they were going to invade this huge, you know, Bollywood, you know, market pretty much. And the story was that Triple H is in a cab, and the cab driver turns around and tells Triple H how over he was and how much they loved DX back in the 90s. And then they switch the finish and put Jinder under in India, bro, because don't you know DX has got to shine 25 years later in India just to get that one pop instead of making our first Indian champion and endearing us to the crowd. So once again, ego and ignorance reign supreme in the booking. And these guys are fucking unbelievable specimens. Veer, Jinder, Shanky, just like you mentioned, and even guys who are average size, Hakeem Zayn can get over with character. I have seen a big contingent of Indian guys with a lot of money on them internationally, and we're not doing anything to them, and we just make them look stupid or go, Veer's coming 25 weeks later. Here he is. Like, everybody's an asshole when it comes to it. If I was a giant Indian guy and had giant Indian friends, I might use that as intimidation on some people.
Oh my God. The next one, this is Brian Dunlap guy. He's our big, like, Super Mark guy in the YouTube comments.
Okay,
this is hysterical, actually. Should Mr. Spectacular Jesse Goddard join the Jericho Appreciation Society AEW? Hello, Conan and Disco. Mr. Spectacular Jesse Goddard retweeted a comment suggesting that he should join the Jericho Appreciation Society AEW. Do you think he'd be a good fit for AEW and the Jericho Appreciation Society? Goddard is currently wrestling for OVW in Kentucky. He has incredible physique, so he might stand out in AEW and the JAS in particular, where there aren't too many ripped muscle men. He also nominated himself for Sexiest Man Alive, while Jericho has deemed his faction the world's sexiest collective. Jesse has projects outside of wrestling, like his comic book with Al Snow, and from interacting with him on social media, Goddard seems like a nice guy with a personality that might work well in AEW or WWE. What do you think? Brian Dunlap, okay, I'm not Dunlap or whatever your name is, all right? Well, I'm not stupid, okay? Listen to this show. He says, Mr. Spectacular retweeted a comment suggesting he should join the Jericho Appreciation Society. You know who tweeted the comment?
Brian Dunlap.
Brian Dunlap, yeah. You know how many retweets and likes this comment has?
Three.
Two retweets and three likes. And one of the retweets is from Jesse Goddard. I don't know enough about this guy. No, he should. The last thing the AEW needs is more wrestlers. That's the absolute last thing they need is to sign more guys.
I'll tell you, like, if you are on the same page with Austin Theory, Jesse Goddard has all of that and more. When it does come to being a body guy, and he was what's the show Billy was on, Big Brother, right? So he's got crossover appeal that way. He looks like Superman, so he's got the sex appeal for the ladies.
So why would he join a group, right? Well, just come up, like, be your own guy. You know, I was like,
if you're going to do that, it's like you kind of got to unveil him as like a Chris Masters masterpiece, you know what I mean, where Jericho goes to find El Sexico and brings him back or whatever, and he's going to be the new Adonis of the group to up our sex level from 10 to 11. So, and he would out, and like, actually – it wouldn't be bad, because then all you got to do is have Ty Conti like look at him, and then you have Sammy be jealous of him, and you have some easy stuff right there in a pose down segments. And this guy's been working OVW for 15 years. So he absolutely is overprepared for every opportunity. And to look at him, I don't understand why WWE does not have him on their roster, because he's a five-star player. Hmm.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.